Cool. So hopefully you can see my slides okay. Is that up here? Great. So thank you, Francesca, for inviting me to speak. It's great to have been invited along. For anyone that's just joined late, my name's Matt Keeble. I'm a final year PhD student based at the MRC Epidemiology Unit. And today I'm going to be discussing work that will eventually be forming part of my PhD thesis, as well as some other ongoing research that's underway. Before I start, I'd actually like to start with acknowledging a couple of people, primarily my PhD supervisors, Dr. Jean Adams and Dr. Tom Burgoyne, because without them, their support, their wisdom, the research that I go on to discuss wouldn't have been possible. I'd also like to acknowledge funding from the School for Public Health Research and support from the MRC Epidemiology Unit and the Medical Research Council. So I like to start all of my presentations with a definition of online food delivery services, just to make sure that everybody's on the same kind of page and really understanding what I'm talking about when I'm discussing these services. And when I refer to online food delivery services, I mean the kind of aggregator platforms, the sort of Just Eats, the Deliveroos, the kind of Uber Eats of the world, where people can view the menus of all of the different food outlets that are registered to accept orders with them, and then place their orders through their platforms. The food's then delivered by either the online food delivery service themselves, or that's outsourced to the food outlet. But for the purposes of today, we're just talking about online services as a kind of broad term, rather than the individual food outlets or like the Domino's or anyone like that. So just so that we're on the same kind of page. And as the slide says here, these services are really an alternative to going out and getting the food yourself. So it's placing the order and then having somebody else bring it to you. And when we look at online food delivery services across the UK, we can see from the map that they're fairly widespread. That's a kind of initial starting point. And when we look at some of the statistics from the previous year, so 2020, we can see that one, people are using them, and two, they're valued quite highly. Now, interest in these services has increased recently, but actually, when we think of Just Eat in the past, they've been available since 2006 as Just Eat, and then under different guises before that. So they've actually been available in the UK for a long time, but it's only more recently that they've become more popular. Now, despite that, there's been fairly limited research into them, but that again is increasing more and more now. And that kind of leads us to the question, and something that I'm really going to try and address today is, what do we know? Because as I mentioned, the research behind them is fairly limited at this point, but it is starting to increase both in the UK through the work that I'm doing, and then elsewhere in countries such as Australia and Brazil, for example, just as two examples. Now, online food delivery services themselves undoubtedly know who's using their services. They can then tailor their marketing, tailor any promotional offers, and tailor the services themselves to the people that are using them. Now, in the first project of my PhD studentship, I wanted to try and establish the different online food delivery service customer demographics, and really try and understand who's using these types of services, because that's really a kind of a starting point for us to then start to think about whether any public health interventions might be needed in the future if we know who's using them. So we used online survey data from the International Food Policy Study that was collected in 2018 across Australia, Canada, Mexico, the UK, and the USA. Now, that online survey data was available for almost 25,000 people. And we asked them, in the past week, how many meals did you purchase through an online food delivery service? Now, within that online survey, they then reported their demographics, such as their age, who they lived with, and their level of education, for example. Now, after some statistical analysis, we found that people who had used an online food delivery service in the past week had greater odds of being male, identifying with an ethnic minority, and living at home with children. And interestingly, we also found that these people had greater odds of having a higher level of education, so reporting that they had a university degree, or at least finishing high school and then having a university degree. Now, this study allowed us to understand who was using the services. And as a kind of precursor of being able to use them, individuals need to have access to the outlets that are available. Without having that access, they wouldn't be able to place any orders and to then have reported that they've used it the previous week. So in the second study of my PhD studentship, I wanted to try and understand online food outlet access in England. Now, it's fairly well established in England that access to takeaway food and the outlets that are selling this food is socioeconomically patterned. So those that live in more deprived areas have access to a greater number of food outlets. So in the second study, we wanted to try and understand that from an online point of view. Now, using an approach called web scraping, where we collected data through an automated web browser, we were able to collect data on almost 30,000 food outlets through Just Eat, which is the UK market leading online food delivery service. And we were then able to map them based on the information that we collected. Now, just to kind of put that into context, we were able to obviously collect this information automatically. We wouldn't have been able to do that by hand just because of the resources that would have been required in order to do so. But we were actually able to do it over a period of almost 2 days. So it allowed us to collect that data in a cheap and an easy way, essentially. Now, when we collected that data, we also collected the postcodes of the food outlets that were registered with the services. We were able to link that with publicly available data on deprivation. And again, after some statistical analysis, we were able to identify the number of food outlets that would be available in different areas based on their level of deprivation. And we can see from this graph here that those who are more deprived, so those to the right of the graph in decile 10, had access to, on average, 106 food outlets. And we compare that to the populations living in the least deprived areas, those to the left of the graph, and we can see that that's quite a considerable difference. And actually, when we look at it like this, we can see that there's almost a 50% increase, or 35 outlet increase if you're living in the more deprived areas compared to the least deprived areas. Now, within this study, we identified the levels of access, but that doesn't mean that people are using them. It just means that they could use them if they were on the platform and willing to use them. So in the third study of my PhD studentship, we investigated whether having access to food outlets was then associated with actually using these services. And in a study that was just published earlier this week, we were able to identify that those who were most exposed, so those who had the highest number of food outlets, reported that they were more likely to use an online food delivery service in the previous week. So that's the bottom quartile here, so those to the bottom of this graph compared to the top of the graph. And that was for individuals that were from the UK in using, again, that international food policy study data that was actually from 2019. So this is all pre-pandemic. This is data that hasn't been affected by the pandemic in any way. Now, I'll just remind you of those individual kind of characteristics of the online food delivery service customers. So, for example, those who were highly educated. And when we conducted some further analysis for this project in particular, we found that those who were younger or who had a university degree or higher, who were female or living with children, who had that highest level of exposure, all reported that they were more likely to use an online food delivery service in the previous week. Now, it might be that these individuals with these characteristics, they may well just be more inclined to use an online food delivery service in the first place. And then when they have more outlets, it might be that they're drawn to using them more frequently. Further research is needed to try and understand whether it's the number of outlets that drives people to the platforms in the first place, or whether it's something else that's potentially hidden within these individual characteristics. Now, I'm sure you're thinking to yourself, well, what about the pandemic? Because, you know, I've mentioned that, and I've mentioned that the data here is all from 2019, so we know that it's not been affected by that. And you're probably quite right in thinking, well, what about the pandemic? Because online food delivery services were one of the primary ways of accessing takeaway food when outlets closed, for example, or during lockdowns. And we know that that's the case both for the UK and in other countries. And since November 2019, I've actually been collecting data on a monthly basis from Just Eat. So again, using that automated data collection, that web scraping facility, it's allowed us to collect data on a monthly basis so that we can try and track any changes over time. And this will be one of the projects that I pick up when I return from my internship with Public Health England, whereby we can start to look at some of the trends. So this graph here is just showing the number of outlets that are registered with Just Eat from November 2019. So that data that we know isn't affected through to just last month. And we can see that the number of outlets has increased month on month. And actually, in October of this year, it was actually 22,000 outlets higher compared to before the pandemic. Now, that could reflect that there were changes in people's purchasing patterns, for example, or it could reflect changes that were implemented from a planning perspective, where a number of different outlets were provided with the ability to offer a takeaway service when they might not have previously. For example, pubs, who would typically focus on serving alcohol in person, had to close, but they were then able to still operate with a takeaway food function that was probably being provided through online food delivery services. What will be interesting is tracking these changes over time to see whether the number then starts to decline as we start to enter the post-pandemic period, if indeed that ever does occur. Now, in terms of people's use of online food delivery services, as well as just kind of broader changes in food practices, there is starting to see some publications coming through, especially from the UK perspective. However, there's a kind of broad sort of range of findings to my knowledge, both in terms of people reporting that they're cooking more, possibly because they have more time, but then also reporting that they're consuming greater amounts of takeaway food, again, potentially being purchased through online food delivery services. Now, what I also think is interesting is that the companies themselves are reporting that they're having higher numbers of outlets signing up, which we can see through the previous graph. And they all are also reporting higher levels of use for other meals that might not always be kind of typical. For example, lunch or breakfast. We're seeing other types of outlets, such as coffee shops, sign up where people can, you know, order hot drinks through these types of services. So again, that's kind of interesting and something that might be picked up in the future. Now, I think that there are remaining questions that we need to understand with regards to these services, and I'll be attempting to address the first two throughout my remaining time of my studentship. So I think that it's important to try and understand what draws people to these services in the first place. And indeed, I've conducted interviews with frequent customers to try and understand their motivations towards actually using the services and then why they continue to use them. And then the pandemic's undoubtedly had an influence on the way that people purchase food, their purchasing practices, their broader kind of food practices. And it will be interesting to see the long-term influence of the pandemic on accessing food more broadly and then using online food delivery services. There's been reports that any sort of trends have been accelerated as a result of the pandemic, and undoubtedly that has been the case, but to what extent remains unclear. And then as we sort of move on to the discussion section of today's session, there are other questions that I think might just serve as kind of interesting points to use as a kind of prompt. So we've not really discussed what food's available through these services. And that's because from certainly a UK perspective, there is fairly limited evidence about what's actually being sold. I know that that's the focus of research from other PhD students within the MRC Epidemiology Unit. But we know from evidence from Australia and Brazil that the food that's available is typically what one might expect from kind of fast food takeaway places on the high street. It tends to be that sort of energy dense and nutrient poor food. However, that doesn't mean that it has to be that way. And it's possible that the services could be leveraged to actually provide access to healthier foods in the future. However, it does depend on whether there's any scope or appetite for that from the people that are using these services. That might just be a fundamental barrier in the first place. And moving on from there, we've seen through the pandemic that online food delivery services and indeed other kind of rapid grocery type services have expanded. So Uber Eats, for example, are allowing people to order food from garages and other types of outlets where that wouldn't have been possible before. It would be interesting to see how these online food delivery services join up with other services in terms of the broader sort of food supply chain. And then finally, I think that it will be important to try and understand how online services are contributing to existing public health concerns. And that really reflects the types of food that's available and also the types of promotional offers that are being used to draw people to these services. And then increasing or potentially increasing the number of times that people use these services, because at the moment it's fairly unclear whether they are being used alongside other ways of purchasing food or as a complete replacement. And that'll be an interesting sort of trend to try and understand in the future. So I think that it might be quite a useful time to sort of pause and have a discussion about what I presented. And then I can come back for my final thoughts, if that's okay with you, Francesca.
Yes, thank you so much, Matt. That's great. You know, I was writing down all the questions and then you covered the questions that I was going to ask you, but I have more, obviously, more questions and I'm pleased that there are so many people.
Great. I'll stop sharing my screen and then we can come back to it.
Yes, is that okay? And great. If anyone would like also to open their camera so that we see people rather than black screens, that'd be lovely if you would like to do so. Just a quick question, Matt. I wanted to clarify one thing, actually. Did you say that there is a higher number of users when the education is also higher, or did I get it wrong?
No, that is correct, yeah. So from the UK, the graph that I showed with education as being higher was actually from the five individual countries together.
Mm-hmm.
However, from a UK perspective, in that kind of final study that I showed, individuals with a higher level of education and then also the greatest exposure to outlets had greater odds of online food delivery service use in the past week, yeah.
And is it because you think the higher education might correspond to a better paid job and therefore they can afford it? Because essentially my thinking is, are these people the people who will go to a restaurant? And instead of going to the restaurant, one, because maybe they don't feel confident about going out for the pandemic, or because they're becoming more lazy or busier, then they're just ordering it and have it at home. And therefore, because otherwise you would think, I remember discussing this with Jean as well, you would think that if you're more educated, you also know that eating out often is associated with more salt and more, all sorts of other things that is not as healthy as cooking at home. So you would think, surely if you're higher educated, you would know all these kind of things, but maybe not necessarily. So it's really interesting to hear this.
Yeah, I think there's multiple factors that we need to start sort of looking at and start considering. Certainly in sort of unpublished work that I've completed and spoken with online food delivery service customers, so conducted interviews with people that use them frequently, it seems to be a real mixture of things. So people report that they're using them because they're convenient and that it saves them time.
Yeah.
But then actually they acknowledge that it takes time for the food to get delivered and that it doesn't save them time. It's almost that they're replacing their time. So they're reallocating the time that they would have spent cooking.
Yeah, with into something else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's where the the higher education level and potentially having more disposable income allows people to do so. So they're buying back their time by using these services. Yeah.
And do you think that the people then have that service instead of, because obviously then if you don't have the time or you can't be bothered or you're not good at cooking, you could then just go to the supermarket and get a ready-made meal. Do you think that maybe people buy this kind of services because they think they're healthier than the ready-made meal from the supermarket?
Yeah, again, there's from what I've analysed so far in terms of the frequent customers, it's really quite interesting from a kind of social norms perspective, because they really did acknowledge that the food that's available isn't all that healthy, but actually that was what they wanted. They had this kind of preconceived notion of what a takeaway quote unquote should be, and then wanted that from their online service. They almost reported that they didn't want to buy salads, etc. They knew that they could get that from somewhere else. But that might be a reflection of the people that I spoke with, maybe having a higher level of education and knowing that they could go and get that food.
Interesting. I'll let others ask more questions because I've got more questions. But
yeah.
Please, anyone who'd like to ask questions or make comments. John, please.
Oh, hi, I really enjoyed your talk. It's a mystery to me. I'm so old, I don't actually use these services. I don't even have a smartphone. But I just wondered about the, I thought that maybe it was a contradiction, because at the beginning I thought you said that it tends to be male people of ethnic minorities who tended to be big customers, but then later on I thought, and with children, but later on I thought you said female, and maybe it was just my ears. But I guess the real question there is, if people who use these services a lot are also maybe in areas of high deprivation, what does that say about the value of a sort of university degree? You know, what's the, there's a sort of conundrum hidden in there that, you know, if people are quite well educated and there's a correlation with being in you know, not so great places, you know, what's the connection?
Yeah, in terms of your first point, the individual characteristics that I showed, they were all individually associated with online service use rather than being each of. Mm-hmm. But you were right in terms of the male and the female. I think that's a reflection of well, first of all, the individuals who completed our survey, but then also that the services are being used by people across the spectrum. Mm. And then in terms of your point with regards to deprivation, or individuals that live in more deprived areas, I think that it's important to realize, or not to realize, but important to remember that these services are available everywhere. So Just Eat, for example, report that they have 95% coverage of the postcodes in the UK, and indeed that's what we tried to uncover when we looked at that access study across England. They were available in all locations across England. Now what that might mean is that places that you wouldn't be able to go out onto the high street and get takeaway food, you could get it through these apps. So it might be that some people live in more rural areas are able to then be connected to food outlets when they wouldn't be able to go and get them in any other way.
So are you lacking, you within your sort of data set? I mean, I can see, because you're using the odds ratios, you're trying to bring together quite a lot of data to try and tease your probabilities, likelihood of somebody using this. But are you lacking some sort of, you know, GPS basically of where people are? So that's why it was appearing to me like, strangely enough, well-educated people that happen to be of a, you know, I don't know, ethnic minority background, we're using that, and I was making it a false assumption, therefore, that maybe, my God, these people got university degrees, but they're, you know, it's not really working out for them.
Yeah. So in that final study, the third one that I showed, that was individual level data. So we connected the individual's postcode with where the food outlets themselves said that they would deliver to, and then the individuals then also reported their use of the services. Mm. Now, what we weren't able to investigate was what they purchased, and that would have been really interesting, because we could have then started to uncover whether they were choosing something different. The individuals with a higher level of education, if they were choosing something different compared to individuals with a lower level of education, and indeed the types of food that was available to them, because we don't know that. All we know is we have that kind of raw number. It might be that individuals that live in less deprived areas and have a higher education are able to choose from healthier food outlets and therefore purchase healthier food, but we weren't able to investigate that through the study. And indeed, that would be very interesting to try and understand.
Also, I really enjoyed your talk. It's really, really thought provoking. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. Anyone else would like to make a comment or contribute? Mike,
Yes, I don't want to belabor this point too much because I think it's related to the previous two questions, but I think I am trying to understand the sort of relationships between education, but it seems to me that income is likely a big driver of whether or not you choose to use these services. It certainly is for me when I'm feeling lazy, but then I see, you know, the delivery fee as well as sort of processing fee, and then also you should be a good person in tip. So, you know, it gets to be quite expensive. So I know you showed the deprivation, and I was just wondering if you could say a bit more about that measure. Was that deprivation, that's just related to sort of geographic areas, right? So we don't have individual level, any sort of measure that would inform the individual level income, because it seems unlikely to me that education is a really strong driver of just use per se. Certainly it could lead to different types of use. But it seems to me that a big barrier would be just your ability to pay for a large markup on your meal.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right in terms of deprivation markers that we used. So we used area level deprivation in the study that looked at access. And then we also used postcode level deprivation for the individuals as well. So it was through the indices of multiple deprivation. Now, in terms of the income question, unfortunately, the study, the survey, sorry, didn't report income very well. So we weren't able to use that as an individual level marker of socioeconomic position. However, within that, we were able to use education as a kind of proxy. We do appreciate that it's not going to encompass all aspects of an individual's socioeconomic position, but it does start to tell us things about their nutrition knowledge, for example, their ability to kind of wade through all of the types of food outlets that are available and make that kind of conscious decision of purchasing food. I think that you're right in terms of it's almost an ability to actually use the service rather than a driver to be using the services. I think the income is undoubtedly probably the big factor. Certainly in terms of who I've spoken with, again, kind of drawing back to the results that I've not really spoken about too much in terms of presenting them. People said that price was a big factor. Having a promotional offer that they could get free delivery or 20% off or a volume-based discount all seemed really important, and that could well be driving the use.
Oh, that's great. There's so many different ways to look at it, right? But that's interesting, and it seems that you are viewing it the same way. So I think that makes a lot of sense how you're working through that.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Matt, I just wanted to ask you, Tom, please go ahead first.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to follow up. I think for me, that's one of the things that makes this a particular, that makes online a particular kind of concern for public health is that these in a way that kind of high street food access, which we know is more prevalent in deprived areas, you know, it may be that online is more used by kind of people with more education, people who, you know, maybe have more money, you know, a different target, a different portion of the market, but everyone is then eating more badly, right? As a result, you've got the online focusing on the high economic groups, and you've got the high streets serving the opposite end of the kind of socioeconomic spectrum. And I think for me, that's what makes this a potential concern, but speaks to both of your points. Sorry, that was very poorly articulated.
Yes, that's exactly, Tom. That's why I was surprised to hear in a way that there's high education and still high use, exactly because there is the associated unhealthiness aspect of it. But I wanted to ask you, Matt, and maybe also Dean and Tom can answer this. I mean, once you have established this data and got some more understanding of this of what you're dealing with, what are you hoping to go on to? And, you know, then are you trying then to connect with policy and to understand how you can intervene and modify, I don't know, the services in some way? You know?
Yeah, I think certainly from a policy perspective, at the moment, online food delivery services aren't encapsulated in approaches to try and make the food environment, quote unquote, healthier. So as I mentioned through previous work that we've looked at, trying to make the high street healthier by preventing new outlets from opening through urban planning approaches. And one of those approaches is by using what's known as an exclusion zone, where we can essentially stop new outlets from opening within a certain radius of a designated area. So for example, a school, we can draw a boundary around that school and stop a new outlet from opening. Now, that might stop a new outlet from opening and then from becoming available online just by proxy. However, it doesn't stop all of the other outlets delivering to that area. So it could be that the delivery area of all of these places is to some extent undermining the exclusion zones. And as Tom's just put in the chat, and something that I was going to come on to is that there's menu labeling regulations that are going to be coming in the future. Certainly, I think it's next year, whereby they'll be mandated to provide their calorie information online. And that's something that's really quite a big potential for online food delivery services. And it's actually one of my kind of final points in terms of the roundup was there's a real opportunity to leverage online services to promote healthier food. But it's not clear whether that can happen at the moment and whether there is actually scope to do so. Because we know that online services can promote certain outlets or promote certain types of food just through their algorithm. It could be that if I've placed orders for healthier food in the past, that I'll keep getting promoted healthier outlets and the opposite of that. So there's a potential for uniform sort of promotion of healthier food. But again, we need to try and understand whether that actually is possible. It's a kind of grand idea at the moment.
In the same way, I guess we can also link it with sustainability. So sending the message to the customers in terms of what they're buying, if it's sustainable, the impact on the climate, etc. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Interestingly, I read an article, I think last week or the week before, that Just Eat have just gone towards using, it's either biodegradable packaging, or they've tried to change their packaging in such a way that it's going to reduce the plastic. Just from a sustainability point of view, that's quite an interesting sort of approach. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how it would offset their delivery drivers. So, yeah.
Apparently, delivery doesn't seem to be a massive, doesn't have as an impact as big as other things. Maybe they could do, so they also increase the sale, they could do the packaging that when you return it, you get the money back.
Maybe, yeah.
That also encourages more purchase.
Yeah.
Anyone else has any more questions or comments or suggestions also for Matt?
Well, I just wanted, I can just bring up my my kind of final thoughts, and then if that's okay, Francesca.
Yes, please. And Matt, I wanted to ask you actually, I don't know if you're going to do that, but have you looked at comparing or creating the two graphs and comparing the effectively the number of people who supposedly have increased the number of people who are now cooking or have been cooking more at home during the pandemic. It is said that there've been more people cooking at home and with fresh ingredients, blah, blah, blah. And then the number of people ordering more online. It'd be interesting to see if one has gone up more than the other and when and why.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that it will definitely be interesting to try and understand how online services fit in with broader kind of practices of around food. These services obviously sit alongside other ways of buying food and indeed cooking and preparing food. So it'll be interesting to try and know whether they're supplementary or substituting all of these other types of things. And I think that's kind of, I just have just a few kind of final thoughts that I'll leave everyone with. I'll say kind of thank you. So online food delivery services are set to continue to grow in both popularity and use. And indeed, the graph that I shared with the number of outlets that are signed up seems to be increasing and plateauing off. It'll be interesting to see whether there are changes in the long term if the number of outlets starts to drop in the future. That kind of final point that you just brought up, Francesca, about online services alongside everything else. It's unclear at the moment whether people use these alongside, in addition to, instead of other types of food practices. And then I'm really quite interested in the diversification of online food delivery services, because we know that online services are allowing people to order from different types of outlets now, garages, supermarkets, just as two examples. But then also thinking of some of the broader kind of applications now that are allowing people to have rapid delivery of groceries, for example, in 10 minutes. I know in Cambridge, there's one of the kind of, I think they're called like ghost supermarkets, where people don't actually go into the supermarkets to make their purchases, but the delivery driver's there waiting and they can get their groceries in 10 minutes. I think that those types of businesses also require careful monitoring alongside this kind of just solely fast food, trying to understand the whole sort of picture of changes of the ways that people buy food. So they're my kind of final thoughts. I'd like to say thank you again for being invited to speak today. And thank you to everyone for coming and engaging in an interesting discussion.
Thank you, Mark. I had a very final question, if I may ask.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you looked at HelloFresh and all these kind of other services, which obviously are the opposite, but at the same time you think so, and also the effect on obesity, you know, maybe if you're getting it just at one portion. So it's kind of interesting. There's so much. Lots of people clapping, by the way.
Yeah, great. So in terms of HelloFresh, that was actually at the very start of my PhD studentship. Jean, Tom and I sat in a room and we discussed all of the kind of different options. And HelloFresh was one of them that came up. And just to try and keep this under control almost, we decided just to focus on online services. But yeah, I totally agree that HelloFresh is an interesting kind of
a hybrid
business,
right?
Model. Yeah, exactly. Because there is a cooking element there, we decided not to go down that kind of route. And it is something that is of interest for future research. So.
Yes, I've seen that Jean is looking for the recipe book assistant. Yeah. Jean, do you want to make that announcement?
No, no more than I hired Matt to do that and he didn't do it. He did something good instead, but I'm still looking for someone to do the HelloFresh recipe box delivery stuff. Still interested.
And it'd be really interesting to look at the sustainability of this different services as well, really. I mean, the whole HelloFresh, for example, they claim that they save in plastic, et cetera, in packages. But I have some neighbors who at some point forgot to tell them. So I picked the box up for them. And there was so much plastic. Everything is on an individual basis. And yes, maybe there's less waste, potentially. Because yes, you use only one specific amount. But then, I don't know, it's really interesting. So then more PhD students for Jean. Well, thank you so much, man. It's been great, really interesting. And if you need also any, guinea pigs for any sort of your experiments or surveys or questionnaires, let us know and we can, ask our network. And I'll be very happy to be one of them.
That'd be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend, everyone. Thank you, Jean and Tom, for supporting this study.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.